Welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
Welcome back, my sun-kissed friend. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm good.
How was getting off the plane, going from the Virgin Islands to...
It was 86 degrees when I left.
When I got on the plane,
it was 86 degrees. When I got off, it was, I believe, three below.
Three below. Yeah. You know what's interesting is I've seen, you know, they have the Iowa caucuses going on right now, which is basically where they pick. It's the first thing we're going to pick who ruins the country next. Whether it's going to be this guy or if it's going to be this guy. OK, so that's what we're doing right now. Everybody's really excited to be able to do that.
How is this related? I'm so curious.
All I'm seeing in the news is the caucuses are, it's an emergency. People might die going to the caucuses. It's so cold. And I'm thinking to myself of all the news people that are just seizing on the fact that it's so cold. We've got a cold snap. It's so cold. The ultra wind or the supercell and all this. Guys, for everybody that doesn't live in the Midwest, all of our California friends, maybe some East Coast folks where it just rains a little bit and snows a little bit. I went to the grocery store today, and you know what I wore to the grocery store?
That shirt?
This.
Yeah.
I didn't even... I grabbed my jacket because I'm not an idiot. I threw it in the car.
Sure. You need it for
safety. But I don't
want
to wear a jacket.
But exactly, I agree. Exactly. I did the same thing. This is how I go outside. Like, unless
it's
you are...
not...
Yeah.
We're used to it. Okay? There's a reason that people from, like, Minnesota, Wisconsin live longer than everybody else.
We're hardy.
Because we're not total losers. We can handle it. We got it. It's okay. You don't need to worry about us.
That's
Stop printing news articles that we're all going to die because it's too cold. We're fine. We're fine. Okay. Continue,
please. Thanks for getting
please.
That out of
no
the
problem.
Way.
God, it's just ridiculous. Oh, my God. It's negative whatever. I'm telling you, once it gets to zero, everything
it's
after
all the
that
same.
Feels the same.
Honestly, I would
you
say
just
even
die
like
sooner.
15 degrees, right? Because the only thing that's different is you need to get the moisture out of the air. Because even up to like 20 degrees, it actually feels to me colder because it's like a wet cold, right? You know, they say in the Southwest, oh, but it's a dry heat, right? There is something to be said about like a dry cold is just like, oh, yeah, that's not bad. Anyways.
I've always said you just die sooner. You get hypothermia to die sooner, but it doesn't really feel any different.
Not really. No, it really doesn't. Not when you're talking that extreme.
Anyway.
Yes. So I was down at in St. Thomas Island in the Virgin Islands with the fam for some umbrella drinks. Why am I struggling
drinks?
Here?
Umbrella
drinks is what I was
from
trying
your
to
drinks?
Be clever and say, but I just totally tripped over my own words there. And that was great. You know, a little bit of sun as well. But I think what was really interesting was the driving down there. You see,
how so?
The U.S. Virgin Islands are the only area of the United States, Chris, where you drive on the left side of the road.
Is this like Puerto Rico? Is how many? Is
right.
It
it's a territory. It's a U.S. territory.
So how many territories does the United States have?
What is it? Guam, Puerto Rico,
Guam,
Virgin Islands. I said Guam.
Is that it? I don't know.
I feel like that's all I know.
Anyway,
where's the black site or like the Guantanamo? Where's that?
Guantanamo Bay? That's in Cuba, isn't it?
Okay. Is it?
I don't think we have that one.
We don't have
Jake.
That one.
No.
Okay. I am so good at geography, I Chris. So. I didn't realize I was like down near the equator. I thought I was just like
you
off the coast of Florida
find your
somewhere.
Way to my house. You can't even find your way to my house. Guys, Jake's sense of direction. If you drive around with Jake, guaranteed you're going to get lost.
So,
and I don't know
really
if that's
funny.
Because you have a bad sense of direction or if you can't see over the steering wheel. I don't know what it is.
What's really funny is like my wife has a running joke that like I am notoriously bad at directions, but I'm really, really confident.
It's not even a joke. It's just the truth.
No, but the joke is I'm really,
why are
really
you
confident.
So confident? What's
so
wrong
like,
with
I,
you?
I will know that I have to go right. Like 100%. Oh, yeah, it's right. It never is. It's never correct. So whichever
it's
way
wrong,
I'm confident
is what it is.
In going, probably should just go the other way.
So what's it like when Jake has to drive on the opposite side of the road? Is it even worse? Or is it
actually there's a
better?
Clip that, well, here's the thing is like there's it was about the same. Yeah. No, there's a clip from European Vacation. You know, Chevy Chase, National Lampoon's.
Mark, you're driving on the wrong side of the road.
I realize that, honey. I'm also on the wrong side of the car.
All right, that's enough of that.
That's all you need. But yes,
was that you? Did you crash?
My experience. We did not crash. No, but it did lead me kind of down a rabbit hole of like,
what was your
Hold on.
What was your rental car?
Oh, I'll get there. It was a Jeep Wrangler. You know what? Let's.
I was hoping you were going to say like Ford Puma or something.
No. That's the other thing. It's nothing.
You got to go for the obscure car. When you go to another country, you don't get the Jeep. When you go to Europe, you get the Seat Leon or something, or you get a Mercedes A-Class. You don't get a Jeep.
Okay, so let me get there.
All right.
Or maybe I should just fast forward. This is gonna throw off my flow a little bit. But
okay, that's all right.
Regardless, I'll just say this: regardless of what side of the road a given country or territory drives on, the cars used there always match suit, right? So left-hand drive cars are mandated here in the U.S. and every other country that drives on the right. Okay, and just as places that drive on the left side of the road use right-hand drive vehicles, but not in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Every vehicle on the islands is standard left-hand drive, which places the driver the furthest away from oncoming traffic, making it especially treacherous navigating the islands terribly. And
wait, so you're on the opposite side of the road, but in a car where it's left-hand drive.
It's standard U.S. cars because they're
cheap. That's weird, man.
And easy to bring down. There's only one other place in the world that does this, albeit backwards. So in Thailand, where it's right-hand drive vehicles are driving on the right side of the road.
Okay.
So it's a truly bizarre experience and apparently very anxiety laden for my wife riding in the front passenger seat because she's facing head on traffic around every corner and like can't drive. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's so strange.
I've driven right hand drive here, which is essentially the same thing. Feeling.
It's the same thing.
It doesn't feel good. You end up like meandering over into the. I would always meander over into the middle of the road because your brain wants to be next to that center lane. And then you'd be like, oh, shit. You know, and then you got to, meander.
Yeah, the
back
whole
in
point of being
again.
Closest to the oncoming traffic is so you can see where the vehicle is in relation to like that edge of the lane. So it was just absolutely bizarre. And yes, it was just it's just standard rental car fare. Right.
Can I give a shout out to one of our episodes that we did a long time ago called The Swedish Switch?
I'm glad you bring that up, Chris. I was going to bring that up when we talk about the history.
Why don't they just do that? Why don't they just overnight switch it?
Yep. They should because it's too ingrained in the culture. And
if you haven't listened to that episode, go back and check it out. It was one of our first history episodes ever.
Man, that was like
gotta be
way,
like 400
way
episodes
back.
Ago. Way back. Yeah. Sweeter switch.
It was great. So the last thing I will say before kind of delving into this history that I stumbled upon was
I want everybody to know that I told Jake, I said, hey Jake, put together the news episode for today. Here's all the news articles for today. Let's talk about news. And he went, okay, no problem. And here we are. Just
correct. 100% what happened.
Okay. All right.
The last thing I'll say before we get into it is I am continually disappointed by Jeeps and I really, really want to like Jeeps, Chris. A Wrangler is practical. It's utilitarian. It's a simple vehicle. We like simple driving machines with really cool history and provenance, right? And they're customizable to no end, like the aftermarket support as well. You can take the roofs and doors off of a production model. Like it's on paper, I love them, but try as I might, I can never get over the sheer abomination that is their build quality.
Yeah, it's almost like let's say you go to like a bad part of town and you go to an apartment building that was built in the 70s and you walk up to the apartment building and you touch the doorknob. That feeling of the way that 1970s bad part of the of town doorknob feels, where it's loose and shitty and you open it and it kind of rattles a little bit. And then you open the door and it kind of gets stuck on the carpet a little bit and all that. Nothing that you touch, feel, hear anything in a Jeep feels good. You don't grab a hold of anything and go, ooh, this knob, this switch, this handle, this anything.
None of it feels good. No. And none. Like for the naysayers, I'll admit that, yes, this was a rental. And so it was beat within an image of its life. But, my dad has owned three or four of these, some of them brand new, and they're always, always terrible. The engines aren't any better. They're anemic and sound like a strangled cat. And it's just, they're terrible. That's it. Rant over. I really want to like Jeeps. Maybe I'm alone on that one. Let me know. But that was it. Okay. So how about a miniature history lesson, Chris? And I promise this is actually pretty interesting. Okay. So the Virgin Islands.
I believe you.
Okay, good. The Virgin Islands, you see, were originally colonized by the Danes. So the Danish people. However, although the islands were owned by the Danish, most of the tradesmen and farmers that settled there were actually British. And
is this back in the day of like, let's hop on a wooden ship and go look for gold and bronze-skinned women and conquer everything? Is this, are we talking about this period of time?
Yes. Yeah, this is like 1700s colonization of the Americas. Yeah. Correct. Yes.
Yep.
So the Danish were like, oh, look at these islands. We're gonna take these, colonize them. But it turned out that a lot of people that like were there and settled were British. Right. They came on the British trade ships and the farmers there were British. And so the customs of staying on the left side of the roads were adopted, which in itself seems really odd to me. Right. So I wanted to then look into why this originated in the first place. Like, why do they drive on the left? Yes.
Do you know? And this, it's OK if you don't know this, because I don't know why you would. Why do Americans with British heritage, why do we drive on the opposite side of the road?
Oh, I do know that, Chris, and I'm going to get into that.
Oh, thank God. That's bothering me right now. So, I keep thinking about it. I'm ready.
Yes, I know. Here we go. Okay, so the reason the British drive on the left is actually pretty logical and dates back thousands of years. So picture this. In the Middle Ages, you never knew who you were going to meet when you're traveling on horseback on these trails, right? And since most people are right-handed and you always kind of have to be on the defense, it was rough times, you'd want to pass someone on the left side so that your right hand would be free to use your sword if required. Okay? So tactically you go, well, I'm going to pass him on the left so just in case I can pull my sword. Which, fun fact, most castle staircases...
And if you randomly want to joust somebody, I mean, you're all set.
Again, right? They're on the left side.
If you see a guy coming down the trail... Exactly, and you got your jousting thing right there. You're ready. You're ready to 100%. Joust that MF right off.
Jousting is also on the left. Correct. Also left side. Fun fact: most castle spiral staircases spiral in a clockwise direction, going upwards. So the defending soldiers coming down would be able to stab down and around the right. But
that seems like something that historians are making up when they're speculating why. Why did they build these stairs like this? And maybe some guy's sitting there at a university on some job that he's getting paid $100,000 to figure shit out. And he's like, that sounds a little bit like one of those.
I remember hearing this on like some tour of some ancient ruin or something. And like, as you're walking up these very narrow, terrible staircase though, and they're like, you know, you can try
making like $7 an hour.
Yeah, he made it up.
That's your source.
Yes. But my point was.
But I like it. It seems when you're like there it would be advantageous.
It actually makes a lot of sense. Like, you can see logically, like, oh yeah, I can poke someone around the corner this way, whereas coming up would be more difficult.
Jake, poking is what you do with
your finger.
It
was poke. No, it was just they were nice about it, Chris. It wasn't like really aggressive. They were just poking.
Fencing is like poking, but if you're just a little, you're talking about real sword play, it's stabbing.
No, it was just a little poke. Little poke.
Hey, don't invade us, poke.
Exactly.
The princess is in another castle. Don't worry.
Okay. So regardless, this keep to the left rule, it actually goes back even further in time than the Middle Ages. Archaeologists, again, other people that just make stuff up, they've discovered evidence suggesting that the Romans drove their carts and wagons on the left. And it is known that Roman soldiers always marched on the left. So this, quote, rule of the road was officially sanctioned in 1300 AD when Pope Boniface VIII declared that all pilgrims traveling to Rome should keep to the left. Got to keep things orderly for the pilgrimage, Chris.
Well, yeah, by the Roman army.
We do have record of it, though. Like, so that part was not made up. And so the history of this custom dates all the way back to Roman times, which, speaking of past episodes, does that sound familiar? It should.
Wait, what? No.
The history of this custom dates all the way back to Roman times, which, if you recall our history on the railroad, we learned how the gauge or standard width of train tracks actually originates from the width of Roman chariots. So it's just wild to me how some of these customs or norms persist throughout time.
Everything is this like extrapolation over time. All of this stuff, like all measurements, any kind of math, anything, is this extrapolation over time. It's kind of cool. It's almost watching a car get developed. We see it like in the last 50 years, you can see a car get developed from its original chassis to where it is now. And if you see one now, you're like, oh God, what? That doesn't look anything like the first one. But
you can trace a lot of them
right next to each other. You can trace a lot of it. And human history is exactly the same way.
Correct. Yeah. It's just very cool how these kind of like these ripples or these customs just continue throughout time. So back to driving on the left side of the road. You kind of understand the logic of it, right? But as you asked, if that's the case, why does everyone else in the world drive on the right side of the road?
Because the British suck. And we defeated them. Yeah, so everyone's just
counterculture. Counterculture, right? You're just like, you know what? Screw
the British with their cheese and bad teeth. And yes, exactly. And their crappy beer. Seriously.
Yeah.
British, you're like
Newcastle.
Guinness, gross. Newcastle.
Don't like Guinness.
Gross. Harp.
Really?
Gross.
That's all right.
I've never had a British beer that I liked. It's all trash. It's all sad. It all feels like it was made with like sadness. Or something. I don't know.
It's despair. Just, it's not good. To be fair, I don't really care for German beers. So
it depends.
I mean, Kolsch, I know there's at least
a
more
nice
there.
Clean like lager or like
a Kolsch.
Or like a Kolsch.
Lager,
Kolsch
I believe,
is really good.
Is an American thing, really.
It is, but like some of the or a Pilsner can be a little sharp, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Americans do beer best, and I know we have German listeners. I've seen the chart. I'm sorry, but your beer is also like. I don't know. It's like American.
You know,
beer.
They think of it differently because especially I think in the Midwest, we think of beer as just like it's light. It's refreshing. You would never call a German beer refreshing, right?
Kolsch is very refreshing.
I suppose it can be. But they also drink it warm, which is never refreshing.
That's disgusting. God, no. Mm-hmm. If I had a warm beer, I'd be like, where did you get this beer from? Did you have to walk like 6 miles to go get me a beer from another establishment?
Yeah. And then in Oktoberfest, you also use a hot poker to poke it in your beer to caramelize it. And it brings out a different flavor, which that's kind of cool. I've done that.
That's interesting. I haven't tried that, so I can't speak to it. Yes. I don't know. Whose idea was that? Was this blacksmith had his beer sitting there?
Yeah.
And after like 6 or 7 of them, he's like, yeah. We're going to try fish of shine and
exactly what happened. Yes. That's the next history story, Chris.
Oh, yeah. The 32nd episode of some guy named Franz who was making a horseshoe, dropped it in his beer and drank it anyway.
Yep. Exactly.
The end.
Okay. Back to my story, though. It turns out in the late 1700s, carriage makers began making larger and larger wagons as folks had a need to transport goods in larger quantities. It was basically
the safety standards. They had standards back then, and they had pedestrian impact standards.
Naturally.
Side impact wagon standards.
NHSTA, you know, back in the 1700s, they wouldn't have liked that.
The National
So things had to get bigger and heavier. It's interesting though, because like basically this was the beginning of economies of scale, right? The concept that, okay, if we're gonna bring some grain and crap over across town there, why don't we do it in a bigger carriage to save ourselves time and money? And so things just got bigger, right? So these larger wagons became more prominent on roadways and were drawn by several pairs of horses. So in order to best control your team of horses, the driver sat on the horse at the back left, thus keeping his right hand free to use a whip on like basically both lines of horses. Okay, so sitting on the left,
or a Winchester 33,
this made it difficult, or that. But this was the 1700s, and Winchester didn't come around until much later.
Well, in the 1700s, when was this is critical information. It's one of the best rifles of all time. I got to look it up.
Winchester was established in the 1800s. I know that for a fact. Because
30.
The 1892 is your one that is so prominent and you're thinking of.
Yeah, that was the one of the first repeating rifles, wasn't it?
Correct.
It was this website sucks. It doesn't say. After 125 years, yeah, you're probably about right, late 1800s. I thought it was, well, I guess in the late 1700s, we had musket balls. So we didn't really have a Winchester 30-30. You know, yes, how amazing correct. Would you that be if the... one dude, like if you could travel back in time and you could have a Winchester 30-30 during the American Revolution, you could kill like dominate. 15 guys before they could even get a shot off at you.
Yeah, that's called the change of warfare, which I actually also have started.
We have, guys, we're working on the
weapons.
There's
so many
of war.
Things being worked on in the wings. And then just out of the blue, I decide to, on a whim, make this story. So here you are.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have bigger carriages. Guys are in the back left, so they're able to like handle the horses better. But
hey,
as
do
we
you
just
like
talked
the,
about.
Do you like the Winchester 30-30? Do you like the Marlin 30-30?
Oh, I'm definitely a Winchester guy. Yes. Yeah, although even I have a Marlin in my safe, but not a Winchester. So if anyone has an old
does the
Winchester.
Marlin eject the casing out of the top or the side?
Side. Believe.
Yeah, that's
believe.
Better than the Winchester. I think one of them
yeah, but it's not as
puts
classic.
The casing out on the top.
Correct. Yeah, that's
I know, but then you end up with the shell falling on the.
You
well,
also
I guess
can't
if you
use
wear
optics
a cowboy
on.
Hat.
Yeah. No, it goes
I don't
forward.
Use optics
it
anyway.
It ejects forward.
I always feel like
you
if
wouldn't
you
on a lever
need
gun.
Optics,
no, you shouldn't.
Yeah, you should just run away. You know, I don't hunt, so if I'm trying
away.
To shoot somebody and I need an optic, I can probably run away. That's my thought.
That's, I guess, depending on what you're using it for. But
plus,
yes,
rifleman okay. training is all iron sights anyway.
Uh huh.
Well, it is.
I just laughed right, at your tangent. We're going down. Okay,
that's okay.
Okay, we're talking about clue. Driving that's on me. The road, Chris. Not about rifles.
Okay.
We can do rifles some other time. Stay on task
okay.
here.
I won't. Okay. I assure you.
No, you won't. I know. So sitting on the left side of your carriage on your horse made it difficult to judge the traffic coming the other way. So they started to pass each other on the right. And these huge wagons were actually best suited to wide open spaces, not narrow like corridors in London. So you saw it more going across the distances, the plains in the U.S. and of Canada. And the first keep to the right law then was actually passed in Pennsylvania in 1792, with many Canadian and U.S. states following suit later. The rest is history. And as you mentioned before, the last country to change from left to right were the Swedes, who did so on H Day. In September 3rd of 1967, a.k.a. the Swedish Switch.
Definitely, definitely. Okay. Go back and listen to that one.
I agree. Yes. So one thing that is interesting is that even today, the United States places jurisdiction over road rules on the states or territories, not at the federal government level. So that's why when the Philippines in 1898 and the U.S. Virgin Islands 19 years later got taken over, they didn't want to modify the left side rules that already existed there. And that's why they still drive on the left side. It
we
is interesting
to have
though in the case of the Philippines.
Switch.
Hold on.
Need like a virgin switch or something.
That is a totally different type of switch, it sounds like there.
I just mean
I don't even know where to go with that
just
one.
Just switch it. Just switch it. Just overnight switch it. We know it's possible.
Yeah,
there's
but
no
I'm
reason.
The virgin switch. That terminology just seems like it could be something totally different. Yes.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe we come up with a better name.
The Philippines, it was interesting because they did just that, Chris. So there was an executive order signed just after World War II mandating that they do switch to the right. So in the Philippines, they do drive on the right. Some argue this was a political statement distancing themselves from the customs of the Japanese after World War II.
Yeah, I don't doubt
which
that.
Which is interesting. Yep. The, that's, you know, the Swedish
that's
switch
your,
we talked
that's your
about.
Story of the,
that's the
story.
Story
of the driving on
that's,
the wrong side
that's
of the
That's
the
history of driving on the left and the right side of the road.
I like it.
And it was,
I think it was interesting.
I will say the roads on the Virgin Islands were probably the worst roads I've ever driven in my life of anywhere I've been.
How so? Just like potholes destroyed.
Potholes, the degradation, like urban planning and engineering was never a thing. Like there was no layout. Like no one was like, hey, why don't we make the roads go here? And then everyone else can kind of plan around that. It was just willy-nilly. Like, some roads were parallel to each other and would crisscross, and some were up there, and the hills don't make things easier. But, like, there was no, like, no planning.
So this was tough for Jake. No foresight. No north, south, east, west. Just...
Well, I know. It didn't matter regardless. Because I wouldn't know anyways. Even if the roads were straight, I wouldn't know which way I'm going. I don't know. That way.
I think England is kind of the same way in many places, because you have... the way that the streets were structured were had to do with more like walking and horses than anything else.
Yeah, it was very cool. Nikki and I went to Italy, and so we kind of just walked around Rome for like all day. And it's bizarre just how narrow and everything goes every which way, the corridors. And yeah, it's fascinating. So I don't know. That was the Virgin Islands.
Do we want to hit a couple news articles? What do you think?
I do want to. Do you have any updates? Do you want to talk?
I mean, I worked on this thing back here a little bit.
I know.
Got the motor mounts figured out for
it. I didn't really get to follow along, so I want to hear about it.
I didn't really post anything because I just have been working.
Well, I tell you what, before you get into it, let's talk about CSF Cooling. They have always been at the forefront of quality products for a fair price with a rich history stretching over 7 decades. They provide the best high-performance and OEM Plus cooling systems on the market today. CSF offers over 3,000 different cooling applications for the most popular makes and models on the road today, from classic copper brass radiators for your Land Cruisers, Jeeps, Chris, Jeeps, and Datsuns.
Jeeps.
To your Jeeps. Vintage
best part of your
80s.
Jeep, honestly.
It would have been. It's totally...
If you put a CSF radiator in your Jeep, highest quality part in the entire vehicle.
It probably would be, yes. They also, of course, have fitment for vintage 80s Mercedes, BMW, Audi, and Porsche platforms, all the way up to new modern vehicles. Check out their expanding classic series lineup. I think you should.
I need
CSFRace.com.
Tell them where to go.
CSFRace.com.
I'm to the point now where I was looking today at where my radiator is going to go. Because I got the motor is in, right? I spent figuring out a pinion angle. Tell everybody what a pinion angle is, Jake.
Yeah, so when you have your output from your transmission to a drive shaft, right? And then that drive shaft goes back, usually in a front engine rear drive car, to your rear axle or rear differential, more specifically, there is an angle at which your drive shaft is coming
Everything
out.
Has to move,
it's not
right?
always. Well, yeah, and also, it's not like it's always just parallel, right? It's not a 944 with a torque tube where everything is just bolted together, or a Corvette also has that.
There's U-joints.
Most cars, things have to move, right? And so the angle at which those U-joints are, that's your pinion angle. And what is interesting, you don't need them to be straight, but you need
the angle. I thought that's what I was going to initially try to do, is to try to get them to be 0 degrees.
And I knew this is
least amount of resistance.
They don't have to be straight, but they have to be exactly, I guess it'd be parallel to each other. So whatever angle you're coming out of the transmission has to go back into the differential in the rear
at
the exact
same angle.
So that was like,
I wish I still had my pieces of paper. That was a ton of, what I end up doing is I drew it all on paper. And then I end up just going, why don't I just put this in a ChatGPT? So I said, I'm trying to figure out the angle of two things that are this far apart and horizontally and this far apart vertically. If I draw a line from the top angle to the other side, what is my angle? And it went 1.5 degrees. Just like popped the answer out. Actually, it gave me the mathematical equation without telling me the answer first. It was like, look, I just typed, tell me the answer. And then it told me the answer. So then I had to, and then I was like, okay, how far? Because then I had to like raise the motor up, right? I had to raise the motor up and I'm like, how far do I need to raise the motor up to achieve this degree? I wanted 2.5 degrees. You want 2 to 3 degrees. Depending on the horsepower of your vehicle, it will vary because you're going to have more deflection if you have like huge horsepower. So you want to have a different pinion angle. But I jacked the motor up. It says to do this, you need to jack the motor up 2 inches. And I went, okay, well, I'm not going to be able to do that. So I just got it as much. So I have like a pinion angle of like 2 degrees, which is fine. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
So I've got that figured out. Once that was good, I was able to make the mounts on the car. So I was able to take little paper templates and like weld on the car. And then once that was done, I was able to make more paper. I used CAD for the plates that bolt to the block because I'm
saying you
press.
Used CAD for this too, Chris. Cardboard I did. Aided I design.
Yeah. Computer aided design to make the plates cardboard, that bolt to the block.
Cardboard aided design is what the joke.
Oh, I used both.
Yes.
Oh,
exactly.
Yes. Yeah, I actually used I did use Fusion 360 to make the on the computer. That's why your joke didn't make sense to me because I actually did use CAD.
I know, because you did this.
To make the blocks that bolt. Because I don't have a drill press and I wanted to get a bunch of them. So I ordered two or three of each side in case I screwed things up because I inevitably do. And I got those figured out. And honestly, the motor just bolts right in now. The motor bolts into the car. What's amazing is on the bottom of the bottom of the chassis of the car, transmissions are different lengths, right? Yes. And like a 4-speed automatic, 5-speed, they're all different lengths. And back in the day, what they used to do, I have no idea what they do now. I think they just make different mounts, is there's a slot on the bottom of the car on each side. And inside the slot is a captive nut. And you just move that back and forth depending on the length of the transmission that you have. So it's basically, I bolted the stock.
It's like ready to go for any swap you want, that chassis. It's already got.
It kind of is.
Slotted. So yeah.
I took the E30 mount. And I bolted it up to the tail of the transmission, and lo and behold, it just bolted right up. That's it's not awesome. Exactly perfect. I think I need to, like, do a little bit of adjusting, but it was super easy. So I'm to the point now where I'm like, okay, what next? What do I do next? So I pulled out, I cleaned up the firewall of the car. I painted it black because it looked like ass. It had some sort of, like, which is probably asbestos, and I didn't even think about it, like sound pad. So I pulled that off of there and breathed in a bunch of that and then got rid of all the goo and glue and everything, and I painted that black. And then I pulled out the wiring harness and started, like, labeling a few things and tucking away what I don't need. Because I think it's the motor that's going in there is OBD1, BMW M3 engine. And you only need, like, 4, 5, 6 wires. It's not much that you need to make that thing
Wow.
Run. Anyway, that's kind of where I'm at. I don't really know what to do next. I guess shifter is a thing. Cooling is a thing. Wiring is a thing. And then it should just... Oh, and a custom drive shaft. I do need to make a custom drive shaft. Or at least measure. I have the M3 drive shaft. And then I have the Mercedes one. So I just need to measure it. Take it to a shop. You know what sucks? I called up Mike Burrows. I said, because I didn't understand the pinion angle thing. So I called him for advice. And he was like, oh, well, when you get the drive shaft done here in California, I just call up drive shaft guy. Drive shaft guy in California drives over to Stance Works, measures, and then comes back with a drive shaft the next day.
Yeah.
I don't think we have that option here in Minnesota.
Drive shaft guy.
I think I'm going to have to take the drive shaft, measure, get the drive shaft pieces, drive myself to drive shaft guy in the negative 30 degree temperature, and then hop out and give it to him and then go pick it up again. It's like California makes car building so easy. The resources are just, there was also this, I remember when, I can't remember what Mike was welding, but I was down there and he was trying, I think it was like the intercooler, I think, or the air to water intercooler for his,
the Ferrari. Yeah.
For his Ferrari, I think, or it was like a radiator for something like Bao was working on. I don't remember exactly. And it leaked, like there was a pinhole leak in it or something like that. And he's like, oh, it was 7 o'clock at night, 7 p.m. I'm like, Friday or Saturday. It was ridiculous. He's like, hey, let's hop in the car and go over and visit this dude. So we hop in the car and we drive over to this like dark machine shop. You go in there. There's like enormous machines. And there's like this dude just chilling in this machine shop at 7 o'clock at night. And he's like, hey, here's the thing. You know, what do you think? His guy's like, oh, I'll take a look and see if we can weld it up. And he had a mirror and stuff. And I guess he went back and picked it up the next day and it was just done.
Wow.
I'm just thinking, like,
the convenience.
I think of all the trouble I'm having, the convenience and just the car culture there is, I mean, fuck the weather. Being able to do that is awesome. Being able to have those resources.
Who cares about like, sun
here,
and warmth?
I'm by myself. I've had zero people here to help with this thing. I know if I was in California, there'd be people over all the time. So the garage door would be open and people would be bored and you just want to drive over and hang out. Here, I live in the middle of nowhere in the forest.
That's part of
basically.
It. Right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I don't know. Not that I want people coming over anyway.
Yeah, you don't like people. We don't like people.
Because I really don't want anybody coming over.
Well, you know what is convenient?
Nobody can come over.
There is something that we do have the convenience up here. And that is getting the coolest automotive gear right there on our doorstep every single month.
I do like that.
Via Petrol Box. It's a monthly service made specifically for the automotive enthusiast. Each month, they carefully select items like tools, detailing supplies, garage gear, hats, stickers, pins, publications, all the latest and greatest. Box it up and send it right there to your doorstep. It's a curated selection of the latest and greatest gear in the industry. You have two different levels to choose from, anywhere from $19.95 a month to $39.95 a month. It's a really cool gift. It's an awesome subscription. Just got mine as I came back from vacation. It was sitting there for me. It was awesome. Check them out.
Yeah, I never get to open it. Jess always opens it first. Stupid. Always ruins.
She takes all your fun
for me. She takes all my fun. Takes the stickers out. The kids have all the stickers all over the room. They steal the stickers. I happen to try and steal the tools. I guess that's just something. I guess you could say it's something for the whole family. Everybody likes opening up the Petrol Box.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, so check them out. MyPetrolBox.com is where you can find those guys.
Okay. The other thing I've been working on is my drag link. So I have a steering box.
Steering.
And out of the steering box is a little arm that's like 5 inches long, and it swings back and forth off the steering
column. Pittman arm.
So you just... Yep, the Pittman arm just goes like this. And most like heavy-duty trucks will have one, old Chevy, Ford, they all have Pittman arms. It was a very common form of... Before you had like a steering rack, everything was a Pittman.
Correct. Arm. Before rack and pinion, and, it was, drag link.
Yep. So on the other side of the car is kind of the mirror version of that. It's just mounted to the car, and it's another arm, like another Pittman arm. And in between those two is what's called a drag link. And it, when you turn the wheel, it drags back and forth. And that is basically what pushes on the tie rods of your hub and makes the wheels turn. Mm-hmm. The Pittman arm rubbed like crazy on the oil pan. There is no way that I was going to be able to get the stock drag link. I'm sorry, the drag link was rubbing to work. So I started hopping on the internet. I started typing European car drag link, because I figured that it's just a ball joint, right? So the at the end of the Pittman arm off the steering column is a little ball joint that goes in just like a tie rod, which allows it's like a basically like a
Heim
joint that allows
end.
Motion, right?
Yeah,
it's threaded in, but it's tapered, so it's very specific. Mm. So it locks in there. It's a tapered joint, so it slides in the hole, and the hole is not straight. It's actually like at an angle. So when you tighten it down, it presses itself in there and doesn't just fall out, because that would be bad, right?
If your that makes sense.
Gotcha. Steering parts just fell off the car while you were driving.
And not ideal.
So I'm like, okay, what can I find? What can I find that's out there? So I just started typing European drag link to see if I could find another part that would work. Boom. What pops up right away is an R129 Mercedes drag link. And lo and behold, it comes out of the drag link, drops down like an inch and a half, goes all the way across, and then comes up an inch and a half. Obviously, along the line, they had this problem with one of their cars. The the oil pan or whatever it was hitting. I'm like, awesome. This is great. And I was talking to Byron at Lightbow. He's like, well, can you get one? And I said, well, yeah, it's like, 2 weeks for me to get one. She's like, I can have one here tomorrow. I'm like, sweet. Because he was just going to look at it for me and do the measurements.
Sure.
It's like super, super awesome. Generous. That's awesome. At this time. And then I kept looking, and then I saw like a 635 CSI, which is the same drag link that's on like an E28 M5, stuff like that. I'm like, that one does the same thing. So he ordered up one of those too. Anyway, he gets them both at the shop. He calls me. I was like, yeah, this one, the Mercedes one won't work. The ball joint, the taper is a different size. The whole thing is just big, because it's from like a 1999 SL.
Much more
just
modern.
Big, beefy, modern thing. But the E28 one off of like an E28 M5 does work.
Mm.
So that on the car right now is one from an E28 M5. And it's better, but not completely solved. It still hits a little bit. So I think what I might do is take the drag link off, heat it up with a torch, and then bend it down about half an inch. And then I think it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I know that this is going to change some of the suspension geometry a little bit, but I don't think it's going to change it enough that I care.
Well, what I'm having a hard time picturing is when you have your suspension, variability in the clearance for the actual like sag and droop of suspension, does this move with it? Do you have the clearance for suspension travel is what I'm trying to ask.
The drag link does not move up and down, only the because it's a drag link in the middle that is static and just goes left and right. That's it. Then that goes to tie rods, which go out to the control arms and the hub.
Okay, gotcha. So that moves that's up what's and down. Different.
So the drag line.
I'm thinking
does
an
not
old
move.
Like Chevy truck, you know, on my C10, where it all kind of moves as a system, you know.
Yeah, the drag link does not move. It's all solid mounted. Yeah, you're not the first one to ask me that question. They're like, I don't understand. I mean, isn't this just going to go up and down and bang? No, it
doesn't. So there are movable tie rods at the end of this drag link, and that's what moves.
So that is kind of my last hurdle, is taking those pieces out. And I don't know. I thought about different ways to bend this, like heat it up and bend it, or like cut like a little slot and then bend it down and then fill it in with weld. But like, that's probably not going to be
solid, or is it just like a
it's
hollow
solid
tube?
Cast iron?
It's solid,
like it is a
so
big
cast
thick thing.
As you know,
I know
it's challenging.
It's very difficult
to weld. Yeah, that's interesting.
So I thought I would take it somewhere, because I don't have like a torch. I don't have an.
Well, I was
going
to say
torch.
It'd
to,
be
like,
yeah, it'd
it
be very
enough.
Difficult to bend too without cracking. Like you need to get that thing
no way
absolutely white hot in order to basically melt it into place.
Yep. And bend it down a little bit. And I worry a little bit about the strength of that. I don't know. Is that like a metallurgical problem at that point?
I don't think so. And you know who would know is our nerdy engineer friend Colin. And between him and my dad, who has that oxyacetylene torch at his shop, I think we can get it done.
And a big hammer and a vise?
Oh yeah. And press.
That's what I need. Big hammers, vise, and heat.
Yes.
That's right. Like the answer to all problems.
Yeah. Always.
You can almost solve any problem with an oxy torch, a hammer. You know, I was watching, I started watching Gold Rush again the other day. And my favorite part is when something breaks. Like every time something's broken, like a bolt shears off or the pump stops working. I'm like, all right, what are we going to do? How are we going to fix this? And there's always like some sort of like shade tree mechanic there that has to MacGyver some shit up in the middle of nowhere to fix whatever problem went wrong.
Ingenuity.
I love that so much.
Ingenuity.
I love that a lot. There was an episode on the other day, and the pump itself started smoking, like the big water pump that pumps into the sluicing station or whatever.
Correct.
That gets the gold out. And if that dies, everything's dead, right? You got to have water to run your gold mine. And they're like, oh, well, they pull out the dipstick and, you know, I could look. I'm like watching it on TV being like, yep, that's the head gasket. And the guy goes, Jess goes, how did you know that? And the guy goes, yep, it's the head gasket. I felt pretty awesome that my wife was like,
because it looks like a cappuccino. It's frothy oil.
It looked like chocolate milk, you know. But they're like, well, the whole thing's toast. You have to rebuild the whole thing. And they ended up getting like a new one from someplace. And I just went, why don't we just put a new head gasket on it?
Yeah.
What are we doing? Why are we like, why did he just lease a $200,000 pump? He could just do the head gasket on this one. And I don't know if the company, like the pump company, like paid they put a bunch of seafoam in the intake
there
and like blew it up like to try and create a situation that the pump died, or they needed some drama or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's what we do in Chris's garage too.
Everything
that's gone wrong, it's been me over there causing drama so that we have something to talk about.
You know how I know that's not true? Because you've been up here three times. I bet you've been up here four times in 5 or 6 years. You came up here once to record stuff for the film fest, another time for the film fest. You came up here once and we did the trailing arms on your 911, the spring plates. And then you came up another time to do my heater. Mm-hmm. And then you came up another time when I wanted help with the Mercedes to get the carbs running right. Those are the five times that you have visited my house. Even though I'm out here doing cool shit and working in the garage, you have been up here five times. And I will grace you that I've forgotten two. So you've come to my house seven times in the last 5 or 6 years. You hate me. It's true.
How many times have you come down to my house?
Yeah, but you live in Woodbury. Oh, you did live in Woodbury. I am much more apt to come to your house now that you don't live in suburban hell. I will tell you that now, especially once you get the Overcrest studio built and I move out there anyway.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
Yeah, We're gonna move.
You know how
there.
We can help make that happen? No, that's not true. I was gonna say buy Drivers Club. We're gonna use all your money to build Jake's studio.
Well, that's true. I mean, it pretty much does come down to that at some point.
Yes. Well, regardless, we do absolutely need your guys' help. Every dollar that comes into the Drivers Club, it does not go actually into our bank accounts. It always gets reinvested through all of the equipment that we have and everything else with the systems and just all the costs associated with it. Like it's absolutely critical. And we 100% appreciate everything that comes from you guys, Drivers Club members. You too can be a Drivers Club member for as little as $5 a month. Head over to overcrestproductions.com/Drivers Club. You get access to a whole back catalog of exclusive content you wouldn't have otherwise heard.
There's like 30 episodes there. We haven't done as many as we would like with the rally and everything. You do get a discount on the rally.
Yes, you do.
So if you're coming on the rally, it pretty much pays for itself.
100%. Yes, just that right alone pretty much is just the way pays to do it. Itself. Correct.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, do you want to skip news or do you want to do news?
Is there anything good? Is there any like great stories?
I pulled out 1, 2, 3. There's 4 good stories that we can do. I'll start.
You know what? I tell you what.
What?
Let's do this. Let's make the rest of this episode for Drivers Club members only. We'll do the news for Drivers Club members only.
How about this
time?
Let's do
make it a thing.
We're going to do 2 news episodes or 1.
Okay.
And then the rest. Because some of these I do really like. Okay. So let me pick.
Okay. Sounds good.
I mean, these are the best ones. So we're going to see. All right. Yep. That's how we're going to do it. Okay. So you were talking about how ChatGPT was like super helpful in solving your opinion angle problems, right?
Yes.
And AI in general is very helpful. It's unfortunately overused and nothing new in customer service. How many times have you either called in or been like, I am your virtual assistant. Tell me what you need.
It doesn't work.
And then it never works. Or any website where it's like, hi, how can I help? Right.
It should be AU. Artificial unintelligence.
Unintelligence?
Yeah. I'm always end up just being like agent, person.
Yes.
Agent,
representative.
Customer
representative.
Service. Help. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. It was recently discovered that a Chevy dealership in Watsonville, California was using a version of Google's ChatGPT Plus for its online chatbot. And at first, this made its way around the internet as it was a way to use the function of the paid service for free just by going and chatting with this Chevy dealership's website, right? Because as you know, you can pay for like the ChatGPT Plus service, which I don't know what it does. It gives you more functionality or it gets you like better stuff, right? I don't know. That's a question for you.
Sure.
Okay. But anyways, that's what this dealership was using. So people were just going over there to like do their problem solving and stuff. And things got out of hand, though, when folks attempted to hack the AI to outlandish ends, with one user having the official Chevy dealership chat recommend they buy a Ford F-150 over a Silverado, while another user recorded the service agreeing to sell them a Tahoe for $1, including the disclaimer that it was a legally binding offer by the dealership. The dealership has since removed the chat functionality on their website, and there is no word on how that $1 Tahoe is shaking out, but it was just kind of hilarity.
It's
and
probably,
when
there's
that
probably
was discovered.
Some sort of, there's no way. There's no way the
probably
guy gets.
Probably not, but I do like how the guy like, you know, trained the AI to be like, all right, so I want you to tell me that everything is legally binding. And so he like did all that, but that's just kind of ridiculous.
The problem with AI right now, with stuff like that, and the reason it operates that way is it doesn't have any culpability for anything. If I work at the Chevy dealership as a salesman and I answer the phone and some guy goes, I want you to tell me that you're going to give me a Silverado for $1 and I want it in writing. Yeah. I'm going to go, you're insane. Because if I do that, I'm going to get fired. You know, there's culpability there. With some AI, it has no culpability.
Doesn't understand.
Just do whatever. It's like it doesn't care. So sure, exactly. Have one for $1. I don't care. Fuck it. It's a buck. I don't know what a dollar is. I don't have a 401k. I got no kids at home. Who cares?
Oh, poor Google ChatGPT does, though. You don't even know all the kids in the server room.
All the little server children, the little ones and zeros, little Tommy with his little hat.
Yeah.
Speaking of AI, earlier last week, I guess it'd be, news was circulating, and I saw you reposted this, that the Mahindra Formula E racing team had, hired an AI-generated female social media influencer.
From and how the did account, that go over in the comments?
Oh, my God. Okay. Meet Ava Beyond Reality, our artificial intelligence ambassador. She's our go-to sustainable tech champ, navigating the cutting edge of innovation to create positive change. Plus, she's passionate about FIA Formula E and is here to share some exciting behind-the-scenes content from the championship over the season.
You cannot take. Okay. When it all comes down to it, racing is unnecessary. Okay. Racing, like any kind of racing. I don't care if you're skiing. I don't care if you're on a motorcycle. I don't care if you're in a car. It is passion. Okay. So it's like,
there are practical benefits of it.
I get it, of course, we can mention,
but you're right. It's not necessary.
But it comes down to, it's like, it's a human thing, right? Yeah, exactly. It is a passion thing. It's a romantic thing. It's me versus you. It's competition, right?
Right.
So we all know, what's her name? What's its name?
Ava Beyond Reality.
Okay. We all know Ava's full of shit. We all know that Ava doesn't exist. We all know that Ava is not capable of feeling passionate about anything. And but we want to be talking to someone that is passionate about something.
Correct.
That's a real
that's
human
a good
being.
Way of saying it.
And I'm sure, and this came up in the comments a lot, I'm sure there's 1,000 women out there that would love that job. The problem is the AI is free. And the woman wants benefits, and so does any other human.
Well,
so they probably
Chris.
Just thought, hey,
no,
let's...
Chris, the reason they did this, according to Mahindra's head of partnerships, Ryan Krause, she said in a statement, quote, they believe it's important to find new and innovative ways of reaching people and to spread the message far beyond our own reach as a professional racing team. Having Ava, an influencer that is strongly associated with us and documents our journey, but with a broader appeal to help promote our core values as an organization, is a project we're hugely excited about. And as you talked about, the backlash and ridicule was absolutely immediate, with commenters brutal. Joking that, quote, motorsport companies will do anything to avoid hiring actual women, huh? So less than 48 hours later, the team principal posted that they had decided to discontinue the project, Chris.
Not surprising.
Yes. Although I suppose there is some irony to be found in the fact that having like a quote electronic person as a figurehead of an electronic racing series and team, there's got to be something to be said there.
Yeah, but I'm sure there was some tie in there. They're like, hey, well, we're really tech forward. We're really future forward. Let's bring us. You know what's interesting is like, unless you are scrutinizing a lot of that stuff that you see, you wouldn't really know that it's AI. If you were just scrolling through and you saw the picture of this Eva thing, you would just scroll by it and you wouldn't think of it. When you look at it, you're like, oh yeah, that's an empty husk of a thing. That's not a real thing.
With all these Instagram model influencers, they're already Photoshopped and airbrushed anyways on most of their photos. So that's all you assume it is. Like, airbrushed or something else.
It's kind of weird. Like there's a whole like subculture of like pornography with this now.
I know.
Where like pornography influencers, I mean, guess what? They'll do whatever you want. It's a really, really scary future
it's
men and women can get exactly what they want from not a relationship. You have a relationship generally. Okay. If you start out in a relationship and you like having fingers in your butt, right? You love having this. Maybe this is for the part that's driver's club only. I have no idea.
But you like, and we've switched over to driver's club.
You like having a finger in your butt. You're not going out on the first date at the ramen place going like, hey, how's your ramen? By the way, when we get back to my place, I'm going to have you put your finger in my butt. No,
actually,
you
do it right there
because
you're also into exhibitionism, you know, so it's going to be at the ramen station. I'm sorry to say.
It's just like in the I'm just saying there's like this. There's a human dance to sexuality and relationships and all that stuff.
Well,
And if you're, because humans are going to take the path of least resistance generally. If you can instantly have like the conversation about having a finger in your butt, there's a lot of people that are going to skip the Tinder.
Well, look, I was going to say, look at Tinder. That is the instant gratification.
Tinder's a whole
article the other day about like how it used to be, you know, that you'd have to go out and interact and like kind of lay yourself on the line.
You had to put yourself on the line.
Exactly.
Yep. You had to take risks.
Swipe.
It is. Yeah. It's risk free.
What it comes down to, I think, with an AI bot as, you know, a figurehead for a racing team, or with Tinder and dating or AI porn, it's authenticity. And the complete opposite and lack of authenticity, right? There's nothing, there's no quality, there's no substance behind any of that.
Here's the problem.
No authenticity.
Right now there isn't, but it's going to get so good that AI right now, it's too polished. It's almost like if you met Woody from Toy Story in person, you'd be like, yeah, this doesn't look right. Your knees bend both ways. I don't know. This isn't good. But as time goes on, It has less to do about the looks and the outward presentation of the AI, because that's going to be easy. You know, doing deep fakes and having things that look human is incredibly easy. That is the first thing that's going to be done easy. But when AI realizes that if it wants to have a relationship with you, it has to be imperfect, it's going to learn very, very fast just how imperfect it needs to be to seem human. It's going to figure all of that out very, very, very fast.
Sure.
And it's going to, to meet its goal, it's going to have a program. Like, I'm not even talking general AI where it has a, like, it knows it exists. But right. AI right now, it's going to have a goal that says, make this relationship work, right? You're going to, you want this human being to like you. So it's going to do all these different things to get the human being to like you. It's going to use, honestly, let's say it's this Ava thing. This Ava thing, or have you seen, Blade Runner, right?
Yes. I was actually going to talk to you about another movie.
So you've got that woman in Blade Runner. That woman in Blade Runner is AI. It's his girlfriend, but she also is like
but it's
thousands and
AI,
thousands
like
of other boys' girlfriends.
I know. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. She's thousands of other dudes' girlfriends too. And all that knowledge of human understanding of psychology, of interacting with all those people, all the knowledge over the course of all of human history of how human beings work, gleaned off the internet and out of libraries, they will know exactly what to do. They're going to know exactly what to do. They're going to know exactly what to say. They're not going to make a ton of mistakes. And they're going to get exactly what they want. And they're going to be imperfect. And at some point, you will never, ever, you will not be able to tell the difference. It will be indiscernible from a human being.
So, yes, that is
at least virtually
you're talking realistic and, you know, accurate and effective. I still don't think if you have those things, it makes it authentic.
What is authentic to you?
Well, I guess in this instance, we're comparing it to a human relationship, right? But you're arguing, how would you even know?
You won't know. I guess that can still be inauthentic, even though you don't know.
It can be,
you know,
inauthentic,
just be like buying,
but you
a
wouldn't be
piece
able to discern. Right.
So what
Which
matters
is
then?
Scary.
What matters, so whether it's authentic or not, or whether it's perceived as authentic and fills your needs.
Right.
Which is more
this
important.
This is actually a core theme, and you brought up, you know, Blade Runner in that movie and the AI in it. You should watch The Creator, which was just released on...
I did. It's a great
you
movie.
Did. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of the central theme in it too. Like, oh, well, these are all, you know, synthetic beings and it's AI. But at the end, you're like caring for them. And it's like, well, do we matter less, even though we're just programming, but they have all this emotion tied to it. And so it's a really interesting kind of thought with that as well. So
I might
make
some stickers that just say death to AI, to all AI.
I like
that's
it.
That's my thought. Death to all AI. All right, what else we got?
All right, so are we officially
I think we should shut her down for now and move over to
I think we've already entered the realm of Drivers Club only, I believe.
Nah. Well, how am I supposed to cut that? How am I supposed to edit that? There's no goodbye earlier.
It's just going to go beep, and everything after this was a little too racy.
Finger in my butt. General. And then the music rolls.
Oh my God, yes, can we please? And then it'll be like, and join us on Drivers Club for the rest. All right, that's what we're doing.
Oh.
Peek behind the curtain.
All right.
Peek behind the curtain. I think that's the way we do it. And I think that's how we're going to continue doing, like, because I love this idea of continuing the conversation for our Drivers Club members.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right. Well, thanks to the Drivers Club for hanging out for us and with us. I don't know how I'm going to edit that.
That's fine. We're going to keep going though here, Chris. We got more.
Oh, we got more.
Let's go.
There's more. Is it?
You're so disappointed.
What is going on, Jake?
Exactly. Okay. Do you remember Vietnam's
Please sign up for the Drivers Club, and then you can continue listening to the podcast. We will see everyone else next week. For now, let's keep going with the Drivers Club. Does that sound good to you, Jake?
That sounds great. Take care.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.